Last year, over $1 trillion of federal funding went to state, local, and tribal governments in the form of government grants. If you've ever done your own taxes, it's no surprise that the rules and regulations that dictate how those funds move can be incredibly complex and kind of intimidating. But for anyone working in social impact, it's worth taking the time to understand them. Because how that federal funding moves through governments to nonprofits and small businesses and even individuals and families affects all of us. These are public funds that can have a profound effect on local communities, and so we all have a stake in how these decisions are made. Welcome to Impact Audio. I'm Sam Kaplan, Vice President of Social Impact at Submittable. Joining me today is David Clark, Managing Director of BDO and self-proclaimed compliance nerd. He's here to offer some insights into the government grant-making process and explore how new priorities have shaped a fresh set of regulations. All right, David Clark from BDO, welcome to Impact Audio. I'm super excited to get to have this conversation with you today.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here and always excited to talk about federal grants.
Yeah, federal grants is a riveting topic, so we're going to have a lively conversation today. Hey, before we jump into that, though, let me get you to just introduce yourself and tell us who you are and what your job is and who you work for and all the gory details there.
Yeah, absolutely. So as you said, I'm with BDO. BDO is the sixth largest national accounting firm, the fifth largest international firm. But here in the U.S., we've got about 12,000 employees, and I lead the practice focused on federal grants compliance advisory services. So we work with largely nonprofit organizations, state and local governments, but more and more recently, even some for-profit companies who are getting federal financial assistance, right? So all dollars from the government governed by the Uniform Grant Guidance, and we help those organizations cross the whole life cycle of managing their grant, developing proposals all the way through closeout, and helping to understand and develop the processes, infrastructure, and policies that they would need to appropriately spend those dollars.
Man, that sounds like a not easy job that you have. And part of it is because to me, government grant making is somewhat inscrutable. Like it is really complex and challenging. And a lot of my own personal work has been done on the side of corporate grant making and private grant making. And so I devote a lot of time and energy to try to understand this world of government grant making from the state level and local government level, even the federal level. So let's just start there. Help us understand what makes government grant making unique and like what makes it a little bit different from corporate or private philanthropy.
Yeah, no, it's a great question. And there's, you know, I like to say probably about 85% of what you would call grants management in a general term is the same, right? It doesn't really matter who the money's coming from, which side of the table you're sitting on, are you the funder, are you the recipient? The process and the life cycles really look and feel the same. The nuance and kind of the fun, if you will, comes in that 15% that's left, right? Where it's different of it does matter who's giving you the money and who you are that's receiving it, because there's different sets of rules or, you know, playbook you have to follow. And, you know, when it's money coming from the U.S. federal government in particular, that playbook is 400 plus pages long and includes, you know, a lot of specific rules and nuances you need to follow, but then also some latitude in terms of, well, how do I actually implement and put this in place for my organization? And then comes along with the expectations that, you know, this is going to be audited and reviewed by external financial firms, potentially inspectors general within the federal government, and they may come knocking and say, hey, we want you to give us some of that money back if you don't do it appropriately. So I think it's more kind of the size and scale of what goes on with the federal grant making, you know, kind of population that makes it look more different and, you know, kind of gives that scare factor that you may not get from the kind of corporate or private foundation grant making side.
Yeah. And you mentioned the rule book, and I want to get to that in just a second, because I know that's a really critical component for grant makers and grant seekers when it comes to government funding. But like, can you describe to us like the flow of capital when it comes to government grant making? So everything kind of starts at the top at the federal level and then makes its way down into different, you know, state government, local government, agencies. Like, how does all of that work?
Yeah, so it all starts with Congress, right? I feel a little bit like the, what was it, the old PBS, when a bill becomes a law, you know, what those Schoolhouse Rocks. It all starts with Congress. Congress, you know, controls the purse strings of the federal government, and they publish annually, you know, the federal budget. That gives the distribution to each of the, you know, units of the government and in the federal agencies for what they have to spend, and is usually so granular that they're dictating, you know, these are the types of programs or activities that we want you to offer. Each agency then, right, controls and manages that budget and executes against what the expectations of Congress are. And so grants can take a couple of different forms. Most people, when you talk about federal grants, think of the competitive process, right? So you have a notice of funding opportunity that gets published, and, you know, organizations prepare a proposal and submit to try to get those dollars. But there's actually also two other forms. There's, you know, kind of non-competitive allocation-based grants that are just, you know, money coming to states or education agencies that are just driven, you know, oftentimes by a formula, and you're kind of, you know, guaranteed to get some money if you fit the eligibility criteria, or even certain Congress people, you know, congressmen or women have the ability to provide discretionary funds out of certain pools of dollars that they control, where they can give financial assistance as well. So the biggest and broadest population are those competitive grants, but there's a number of ways that the dollars start flowing. And then you would have things like, you know, the CARES Act or ARPA, or now the, you know, BIL, IIJA, where there are specific acts of Congress outside of just that annual federal budget setting process, allocating, you know, huge sums of funds for specific purposes that then the agencies go and execute.
So that clears it up some. If I'm a nonprofit organization sitting here in Bentonville, Arkansas, and I want to seek a government grant, how would I go about getting started doing that?
Yeah, so it's, you know, thinking of what are the programs or activities I'm hoping to accomplish, and then trying to identify, okay, who would be the most likely funding agency that's going to give me those dollars. There's a couple of ways to look for and find what's out there. So first and foremost would be grants.gov, right? It's a website maintained by the federal government that publishes all of their active and or, you know, recently closed grant making opportunities. There's also a relatively new group that's been formed called the COFA, the Council on Federal Financial Assistance, COFFA, and they're creating a federal project inventory. So there's a new webpage out there that actually gives, you know, a really detailed list of all of the federally funded programs and kind of more description of what they are. So that's has, in my opinion, a little bit better search functionality than grants.gov does. So you would kind of start there, see what programs are out there and available, and then could use that information to go to grants.gov and drill in a little bit more specifically when you now know that kind of assistance listing number that you can work from.
Let's go back to this playbook that you referenced a few minutes ago. So I think what you're referring to is uniform guidance, or 2 CFR 200 uniform guidance to be official. So this is essentially like a huge playbook on all of the rules and compliance that has to be followed, whether you're making a grant or applying for and receiving a grant. So for the uninitiated, help us understand what 2 CFR 200 is all about.
Yeah, so 2 CFR 200 and the CFR in this case stands for the Code of Federal Regulations, right? So it is the federal rule book. It's the details for both federal agencies who are giving out financial assistance, as well as the recipients of that assistance, of what do you need to do, both from, you know, processes and controls, as well as just specific rules around, you know, where and how you can spend the money. And it's something that, you know, it's been in place for about a decade now. Just recently, the beginning of this month, October 1st, they released an update that went into effect October 1st. But prior to, you know, the past decade, they had what the Office of Management and Budget used to call their circulars, and they were, you know, distinct, focused on different industries or types of recipient organizations. And you had to check across numerous different documents and web links, right, to understand all of the rules. So in 2013, the Office of Management and Budget worked in coordination with really the whole federal agency infrastructure to consolidate all of that into just this one playbook that everyone was going to follow. It applies across the board. And now it's your single stop shop to go and look at, okay, what are the rules? And both, again, it's divided into five subparts. Subpart A is your general definitions and how to read this document. Subpart B is really focused on the agencies themselves. Subpart C gives guidance both to agencies and recipient organizations, really around the competitive process and the pre-award activities. And then subparts D and E are really focused on those organizations receiving the grants and what the expectations you need to have in terms of your processes and controls to manage that funding, and the allowability of costs that you can charge back to the government for reimbursement.
And it's, to me, it's kind of a double-edged sword. And what I mean by that, David, is that on the one hand, there are a lot of rules and regulations and compliance factors that are all part of 2 CFR 200. And so whether you're making a grant, whether you're seeking a grant, you really have to dig into this guidance to make sure that you're following all the rules of the road. And it can be very, very complex, and a really arduous process to become an expert in all of these rules and regulations. The other side of the double-edged sword is that it removes a lot of ambiguity out there. And so if you're a grant seeker, you have a clear path to understand what I have to do throughout the application process and throughout my grant execution process and throughout the closeout process, right?
Yeah, it's certainly, I mean, from the government, federal government's perspective, they're trying to provide as much transparency as they can for, what their process looks like, the expectations they place on themselves and their agencies, but also for, all recipients of these funds. Because of that, this applies to the smallest community-based organizations who it may be their first foray ever into federal financial assistance, and they, have a very small award, to colleges, universities who may be spending over $1 billion in research grants and, do this day in and day out. And because of that, they have to make it both specific enough to tell you what the rules are, but ambiguous enough to allow you to figure out how you're actually going to follow those rules within your own organization. So it does take kind of a lot of understanding and nuance and time just to understand how is this going to fit for me. But at the same time, unfortunately, right, those mo nearly all of those rules come into play with that first dollar you're spending. So there isn't a graduated scale or kind of a way to ease yourself into it for most of those rules. And so it can become pretty complex and daunting in many ways for organizations newer to the world.
Yeah, and so is that something that BDO can help nonprofits or like public universities with in terms of if they're seeking grants or they've received a grant, but we're not really sure exactly what we have to do to follow all of the compliance rules. Like, can BDO assist with that?
Absolutely. Yeah. We're working with organizations. Many of our clients are those organizations who are new to government grants, or, maybe they've had grants, but the risk profile has changed. They're starting to approach that threshold where now they're required to have the annual single audit, and someone's actually going to be poking and prodding a little bit more at what they're doing than they had in the past. And so while, maybe I was okay thinking I can skate by previously, I'm now not so sure and don't want to jeopardize what my organization may be doing or future funding potential. So a lot of the work we do is helping organizations kind of assess their compliance readiness, looking at, the policies and processes they have in place today and helping them come up with a roadmap and then execute against that to, really put the necessary foundation and framework in place. Either in addition to or in combination with that, we do a lot of training as well, both through, working with organizations like Submittable to be able to have webinars out there, or, through focused kind of training programs for a specific organization that wants to bring us in and, making sure their staff are up to speed and understand what the rules are, how we comply with those rules for our organization, and what the risks may be if we don't.
All right, so we won't get through the like hundreds of pages of rules of uniform guidance on this podcast. But earlier this month, there was a fairly significant update to those rules. Can you walk us through what some of the key changes or enhancements to 2 CFR 200 are?
Yeah, so the Office of Management and Budget, which owns 2 CFR 200, has really put a focus on trying to add enhanced consistency and just readability of the guidance, as well as continue to eliminate some of the burdens or obstacles that grant recipients may face and feel. So they've made changes throughout the document and even to certain parts of 2 CFR that are not considered the uniform guidance, but really trying to add some, you know, just greater visibility to what the expectations are. So they've made changes, instructions towards the agencies themselves for trying to simplify and get consistency for what that notice of funding opportunity looks like, right? So when an agency publishes, here's money we have available for you to receive, they want it to be consistent agency to agency so that I, as a grant recipient, can know, okay, if I'm looking at this funding opportunity notice, I can see here's where I would expect to see the description of who's eligible for it. Here's where I could see expect to see the description of what's the intent of the impact for this program. Here's where I can look to see how would I be evaluated if I wanted to submit. So just to get that consistency. Later on, they've made changes to try to enhance, you know, again, remove some of the burden for recipients. So they've increased certain thresholds. So probably the biggest change that the industry is excited about is the de minimis indirect cost rate is being increased from 10% to 15%. So organizations who don't have a negotiated indirect cost rate can now claim up to 15% without any substantiation or negotiation, which doesn't sound necessarily that big or drastic, but really is a pretty big shift from the government's perspective in terms of just what that means for real cost recovery for these organizations. And reflecting and respecting that it takes a lot of administrative effort to run a grant program in an organization. They've made some similar changes, right? The equipment threshold increased from $5,000 to $10,000. And as part of that 15% de minimis, they've changed certain definitions within the modified total direct cost pool so that organizations can now include more of the expenses of subawards as part of what they would apply their indirect cost rate against. So those are the main kind of cost impacts that I think a lot of people are excited about. They've also raised the threshold for when an audit or a single audit is required for organizations. So that's now gone up to $1 million in federal expenditure during a fiscal year. So over the past, really, I think 4 or 5 years, the government has doubled what used to be a $500,000 threshold. They'd stepped it up to $750,000 initially, and now it's up at $1 million. So again, this is going to save thousands of small nonprofit organizations the cost and, you know, just the burden of having to go through a single audit that they otherwise would have had to under the prior rules. And then they've made a lot of just wording changes, trying to clarify and, you know, add consistency to how we read and interpret the information. Most specifically, you know, they've gotten away with the term non-federal entity, right? We always made everybody feel warm and fuzzy that I get to be a non-federal entity. And now they're using specific terms like recipient or subrecipient so that it's clear, right? What applies to me if I receive this directly? What applies to me if I'm receiving this passed through someone else? And in which cases does it apply to everyone?
I think it's really cool. Like in corporate grant making and private grant making, there has been a real push towards more equitable grant making, meaning, you know, make things easier and more fair and to help remove some of that power imbalance that exists between funders and those who are seeking funds. And so it feels like in its own way, the government is trying to achieve greater equity with nonprofit organizations and those who are seeking these grants with some of the changes that were introduced earlier in the month. So that's super cool. I do want to go back, David, like talk a little bit about this single audit thing. Like that, when I hear audit and government in the same sentence, I get very, very nervous. So like, what is a single audit? And is it reason for grant recipients to be nervous as well?
Yeah, so a single audit is the government's plan to come up with. We want to have, you know, some oversight and assurance that all these, you know, billions or trillions of dollars that we're distributing are being used appropriately. But we as the government don't have time to go in and do it, right? It's like thinking that the IRS would be able to audit every American's tax return, particularly if they're over a certain spending threshold. So the single audit was devised as a way to say, okay, if you meet the criteria of, you know, a nonprofit organization or, you know, anyone other than a for-profit organization who spends over, you know, the single audit threshold, which again is increasing to $1 million now in a given year, you need to have an external financial firm come in and do a review that looks at two main areas. One is the controls and processes that you've put in place in line with the uniform guidance expectations. And then the second is actually selecting a sample of your largest awards and testing some of the costs charged to those to confirm that they are following the expectations around allowability and eligibility. The nice thing about it, and kind of the reason it is the single audit, is it's one audit across all of the activities that you're doing for the federal government. So organizations prepare what's known as a SEFA, the Schedule of Expenditure of Federal Awards, and your auditors would look at and consider that whole population and do their sampling and testing based on that. But the audit is really saying, okay, your policies and processes are consistent across these programs, so I just need to audit you once and give the government feedback, as opposed to, historically what may have been done in the past, having, each individual agency or, unit of each agency come in and say, well, I'm going to audit my specific program, which for some organizations, if they have, right, 40, 50, who knows how many hundreds of federal grants that they receive, they'd be doing nothing but responding to and dealing with auditors.
Yeah. And David, one of the key differences in government grant making and seeking grants from a private foundation is this idea that with government grant making, very often you receive a grant, but you don't actually get the money. You have to spend your money and then request a reimbursement from the grant maker, right? Can you explain that process a little bit for those who might not be familiar with it?
Yeah, so you're right. The preferred method of government grant making is a cost reimbursement structure. And so that means, as you said, right, the organization incurs those expenses. In many cases, is actually, maybe even having to pay out the cash associated with those expenses. And then you submit information to the government asking them to reimburse you for those costs you've already incurred. That's the government's preference. And I'm sure most people can understand why, right? I'd much rather just have someone saying, okay, I need you to pay me back, right? It's like why I prefer spending money on my credit card. They're going to outlay the cash initially, and then I'll just pay for it once a month. It's possible to get funding in advance, and certain types of programs will do advance funding. But by and large, the most common is, right, yes, you have to incur the expense yourself, and then you tell the government what those expenses were. That allows them to review and, give a little bit more oversight onto the eligibility of those costs, and then they will reimburse you or refund you for the outlay that you've made.
Yeah. So going back to that concept of equity, then, like it feels that if you are a smaller organization or you don't have the bank account to spend the money in advance and request that reimbursement, it kind of feels a little inequitable in that the process may be skewed more towards very large nonprofits or universities or other agencies that have the cash in the bank to be able to spend the money and then request a reimbursement, compared to a grant from a private foundation or a corporate foundation where they essentially just give you all of the cash, in one lump sum. Like, does that conversation around equity for smaller nonprofits come up very much in this space?
It's certainly a factor, and as I mentioned, I mean, the government has mechanisms that can allow them to do more of that, funding advance structure. If you're receiving an advance from the government, they still prefer it to be very time delimited, and so that, right, if we're advancing you the funds, you should be getting them out the door very quickly, and kind of a 4 to 5 day turnaround. So they don't want you to just be holding, what is the government's money and collecting interest or whatever else you may be using it for. But it does create challenges at times, and it can be a barrier to entry, if you will, for some of those smaller organizations, right, who don't have the backing. They may not have other sources of unrestricted funds or whatever other funding they may need to operate. In addition to, right, as we talked about before, a lot of times the compliance expectations and the process and control needs are at a higher level to spend those government dollars. And so there's oftentimes, a bit of an investment. Sometimes it's just time, but it could be time, dollars, and other resources to be able to say, yes, I'm capable of spending government dollars. Please give them to me.
A lot of grant dollars on the government side are flowing to nonprofits for these altruistic expectations. Like, we're working towards achieving some great thing that will make society better. So if I'm the state of Arkansas and I am reviewing grant applications, like, on the one hand, my perspective is that I'm paying a lot of attention to all these uniform guidance rules, and I'm making sure that the nonprofit organization, has ticked all the boxes, that they're eligible, that they're capable of spending the money, capable of achieving whatever it is they say they're going to do. But beyond making sure that they're following all the rules, like, what am I thinking about if I'm the state of Arkansas and I want to award a grant to a nonprofit organization? Like, what's my decision process, or what am I thinking about in terms of selecting one organization over another organization for those grant dollars?
Yeah, and it's a great question, and I won't claim to have the silver bullet answer because it's going to vary a little bit. But I think the key point you hit on is right. All of these things we're talking about, the government calls them right. They're financial assistance. They're not an acquisition, right? An acquisition, I'm buying something for me, just for me to use. The idea of this assistance is it's for the public good. It's for the public benefit, and so all of these programs should have a reason why we're developing them. And so I think for organizations, that are looking at how do I make myself the most competitive or how do I best position myself to do that, it is making sure that you're not just telling them, hey, I have, the best accountant in the world who's going to make sure I never have a single unallowable expense, but it's how am I using the dollars to make that impact and align with what's the goal of this program or what are we trying to do? And, the governments, be it the federal government or state and even, local municipalities understand there are going to be organizations better suited to serve a certain population, whether that's because of the geography or the type of work they do. And so it's really telling that story, right? And taking the chance to show off a bit of, flair and uniqueness for why am I the organization you would want to pick and how, what I do and the mission and impact that I'm making aligns with the impact you're hoping these funds will make.
So tell me a little bit about, like, okay, so I'm a nonprofit organization. I received my grant from the state of Arkansas. What are the expectations in terms of me reporting back to the state of Arkansas on like how I'm achieving the impact that I said I was going to achieve? So clearly I'm going to be expected to provide a lot of financial related data back on like what I'm doing with the money, but what about like the actual impact that I'm achieving, like with the money that the state of Arkansas gave me? Are there requirements and uniform guidance around like how I report back that actual impact that my organization is making and in my community?
Yeah, from a uniform guidance perspective, there's not beyond saying you have to comply with sponsor requests for information. But usually it's going to be detailed in your grant award or for, the specific agency or government entity that you're receiving the funds for. They'll tell you, right, what does this look like in terms of both the timing and frequency of how often we want these reports? And what information do we want you to tell us? The federal government has shifted more towards, this idea of transparency, not just in terms of where the dollars have flown and creating things like usaspending.gov and other websites to show the flow of funding, but also to get this impact reporting and monitoring and metrics of, well, how are we using the dollars? Where are they going towards? And kind of what are we able to do with it? But unfortunately, there's not just a single answer of, yeah, 2 CFR 200 dot whatever section is going to tell you exactly, because it is going to be unique to your specific award.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's my vote then on how we update uniform guidance for the next big go around is let's focus on defining some consistent ways of reporting impact on the work that the nonprofit organizations are doing. I mean, God knows in the nonprofit sector, like private philanthropy has not gotten this right for decades and decades, and every foundation for the most part still requires different ways of reporting, different KPIs, different metrics. And it's really extremely challenging to see if philanthropy is changing a system or changing the big picture. Like what kind of impact, 10 organizations all working on the same focus area are actually achieving. So maybe it is. Maybe the government will come in and help fix this for everyone.
Yeah, and it's interesting you say that because the federal rulemaking process, again, to get on my Schoolhouse Rock soap stand a little bit more again, there's a process for, OMB couldn't just say, hey, September 15th, we're going to tell you that as of October 1st, something is new, right? This process started months and months ago with the first, proposed rulemaking coming out in, I think it was October of 2023, that, announced here are all the things we've already spent time thinking about and what we plan to change and open it up for public comment for then, them to get to the final rulemaking. part of that proposed rulemaking was, you know, not just consistency in financial reporting, which OMB has been able to say, you know, you can only ask for financial reporting information using a set of predefined OMB, you know, by OMB data elements. But they actually were trying to get technical and programmatic reporting to also, be required to follow only a certain set of standards. That language actually came out in the final rulemaking that got published in April because so many of the agencies and programs, you know, raised their hands and said, hey, we can't say everyone is going to want to collect the same type of programmatic data all across the entire federal government infrastructure, right? We have different types of things. And what, you know, I as potentially the EPA cares about is going to be very different than what someone in Department of Education or Department of Justice wants to know. And we can't get to that single point of truth of like, really, what is that metric? So it's on their radar for sure. It's something where I expect maybe there'll continue to be conversation to try to move towards more of an alignment. But it's just, I thought it was interesting that it is something, you know, initially they tried to do and had to kind of come off the table, at least for this round of edits.
Yeah. And you have to give credit where credit is due. Like the government typically does a pretty great job of collecting data, making it publicly available for insights and other types of reporting. There are so many different data standards out there across the philanthropic landscape and across the nonprofit sector that it would be super helpful to have, you know, whether it's the government or some sort of agency come in and provide some guidance on, you know, ways of reporting consistently up to a common focus area, whether that's the SDRs or something, I don't know. But yeah, anyway. All right, last question for you, David. So if I'm a nonprofit organization, I have never sought a government grant before, like what simple advice can you give me for getting started?
Call BDO. No, not obviously, right? I think it is. There's a number of resources out there. I mean, starting with the federal government as the sponsor, I mean, they obviously have a vested interest in you being able to spend these dollars correctly. So, you know, even starting at grants.gov, not only does it have a listing of all the programs and funding that's available, has a great help site with, you know, a number of different trainings and, you know, webinars and other information that you can look through to understand what does this mean, right? It's also particularly in the nonprofit space, one of the things I love working with nonprofit clients is they are very open to share. Right? They want to help other organizations achieve their mission as well. So, right, find friends or peers, you know, current or aspirational that are doing similar things to you and have conversations. And then lastly, you know, I think it is, you mentioned NGMA, you know, NGMA or other industry associations have lots of information out there, right? There's routinely, you know, publications, webinars, and other things where if this is something you're really going to go after and you want to commit to, and for many nonprofit organizations, right, this is one of the most fruitful spaces to find revenue opportunities. Spend the time to make sure you understand what you're getting yourself into, because this unfortunately is not just something where you can be a fly by night. I'm going to collect some of these dollars and not have to do a lot of legwork to do it.
All right. David Clark from BDO. This has been a riveting conversation around government grant making. And typically those two things don't go together, but you've done a fantastic job of making this super interesting. And I'm positive that many, many of our nonprofit listeners are going to be excited about diving into uniform guidance and figuring out how to get some of those government dollars for their own programs. Thank you so much for joining me on Impact Audio today.
Absolutely, Sam. Appreciate you having me on.
It's always a bit humbling to hear how change happens in the public sector and how incremental it is, but I'm excited to see governments prioritizing transparency and clarity, and I'm glad to see those priorities reflected in the new uniform guidance. Also, I feel lucky to know that there are people like David out there who revel in the complexity and can help the rest of us keep up. Thanks for tuning in to Impact Audio, produced by your friends at Submittable. Until next time.